This week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast is brought to you by Gunn Street Wiring, a micro-instrument electronics company obsessed with overall quality. That's right, they're a new approach to the guitar wiring market. Because, of course, when it comes to music, there is endless variety. But when it comes to your instruments wiring, your manufacturer generally gives you one type. However, Gunn Street Wiring put forth a shiny alternative by creating a massive range of different wiring harnesses suitable for every single musical style. They have a beautiful website where you can navigate around selecting your instrument shape, then choosing between 50s modern and hybrid wiring harnesses, and within that, every single different type of harness you can possibly imagine. It's an affordable mod, and if you go with Gunn Street Wiring, it's a mod you simply won't regret. Check them out, gunstreetwiringshop.com. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds.
Have you got your arm in the air?
I often put my arm in the air when I'm doing this.
It's just you and me.
Yeah, but I'm allowed to. I can be just flamboyant. Yeah, okay. I'm just gesticulating a little bit. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. The world's
don't
number...
let me put you off having your arm in the air, mate.
You're putting me off. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week, unfortunately, by a solo Jay Cross.
Hello.
Hello, Jay
Cross. I like that we're what? Is this 13 seconds in? No, where are we? 44 seconds in and I've already broken your spirit.
Yes, yes.
That's nice.
Yes, you have. And actually most people's ears due to your fluctuation in volume.
Listen, I'm just here to do the talking. You're the one who's in control of the levels.
Yes, that is true. I am monitoring. So this week we are Matt... we are Matt... Knight's less. Matt Knight's not here. He's
in some mystery thing. I don't know.
I can't remember. He said he could jump in halfway through, but we were like, well, you can't really know. So Matt Knight's not here. And when that happens, when Matt Knight can't make a podcast, normally, certainly of recently, we would ask Mark Packham. Unfortunately, Mark Packham was quite happy to do it and then managed to... instead of podcasting, he realized
so desperate to get out of it
that he threw himself off the top of a plastic wall at climbing and has broken his ankle.
Yeah, I got a last Friday. So where are we? Today's Monday. On Friday I was driving home from work and he called me and he was like, "Oh, you're right. Yeah, what's going on?" And I was like, "This is a very weird thing for you to ask me, but yeah, no, I'm fine. I'm just." Driving home, he was like, "Oh, cool. How was your day?" It's like, it was fine. And he went, "Oh, great, cool. Got any plans for tonight?" Don't think so. No, just going home. He's like, cool. Any chance you can come pick me up? I think I've broken my ankle. I went and picked him up and tried to persuade him to go to the hospital. And he, by the time I had picked him up, he was like, no, I feel fine. It's a little bit sore, but I think I'm okay. So I tried to convince him to go. He didn't want to go, which is fine. He's not a child. He can make his own decisions. So I dropped him off at home and then Saturday morning he changed his mind and went to the hospital and he has a broken ankle. So, do what you need to do, but I would say that if you have that sort of suspicion, then maybe it's time to, just be a grown up and admit that you fell off a wall.
Yeah, so that made us Mark Packhamless, but that's okay because we have two more backups in the form of Dan Grace and Mary Spender. They're our go-tos. Dan Grace couldn't make it. I can't remember why. I don't think he gave us a reason.
He didn't tell me either.
He's drunk.
I think he just didn't want to do it. And at the end of the day.
Yeah, Mary Spender would have, but she's doing something with Guitar Center, and because they're moderately.
Who's that?
I don't know, but apparently they're moderately larger than Guitar Nerds.
Really?
I mean, to be honest, it sounds like they've ripped off our name just a little bit. The guitar part of it, anyway.
Guitar Center. Is that like some political movement?
I don't know. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Okay, sounds like we'll have to Google it, I suppose. But but yeah, so that rendered us down to me and J Cross. So we thought, well, that's fine because
J Cross and I.
Yeah, yeah, and we thought that, well, don't speak about yourself in the third person, mate.
Hang on. But that rendered it down to me and J. No, you were wrong. I was wrong. Sorry. Okay. Yeah. No.
And then we thought, well, it's fine. We'll just do sort of the podcast as normal. And then this week might be the first week potentially in Guitar Nerd's history when nothing has been released.
Yeah, we were really scrabbling around looking for any releases, any news. And the only things we could find were outlets who were announcing products after us. So, you know, there was the article on the new MXR carbon copy. Yeah, we covered that last week.
Yeah.
There was, what else did I see? There was a couple of other articles that
a couple of companies have brought out iOS app versions of their
Very exciting. There was loads of new plugins released this week, which we really
always exciting.
Yeah, so really slow news week, very weird.
But that's actually good because, to be honest, you know, we often speak so much about the news that it's nice to, instead of speak about new releases, we get to speak about things that we actually have opinions on. So we have we put a few feelers out to the Guitar Nerds Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/GuitarNerdsForum. And we asked for people's input on a few topics. But first of all, we're going to take a load of questions from the group as well as answering some other things that we asked people. But first of all, J Cross, you ran a 10K this week.
I did. Yeah. I mean, it's not quite as exciting as Matty running a marathon, as he's wont to do. Maybe that's what he's doing tonight.
Possibly.
I it wouldn't surprise me, in all honesty. But no, I ran a 10K. I ran my first, my first competition. I'm looking and thinking. I'm not looking at anything in particular.
Right.
I ran my first competitive 10K. It wasn't really competitive because...
What's a competitive 10K?
Well, it's just like there's a few hundred people.
Right. Is it like Road Rash?
Yes. It's like Donkey Kong in Mario Kart. Yeah. So right. I took a load of bananas and threw them at people.
Great. Always a good one. But only a good weapon if you're in the lead.
Yeah. Although the way that this worked, it sort of double backed on itself. So there was a couple of points where the leaders were running towards me. So I could have thrown in front of them.
Or clotheslined.
But I just... I set out what I wanted to do was do a 10K in less than an hour. And I thought that was a fairly reasonable time, but I finished something like 300 out of 450 odd people. Yeah. So it wasn't, it was fine. I broke my personal best. I was very excited about that.
Yeah.
Finished in 58 minutes or something. So
impressive.
I got into it. There's one in Brighton next month. I'm going to do that. I'm aiming for 55 minutes.
Nice.
So yeah, I can see how Matty.
Well, congratulations.
Thanks. I can see how Matty really does get into it, but marathons, that seems like a lot of effort. Yeah. I don't want to be running for 4 hours. I've got more going on in my. That seems like a mean thing to say. I would just find that boring. I think so. Yeah. I'm not going
to
do that.
Yeah, the only thing I want to be running is the four cable method.
Yep. Or to the off license when they're closing in 5 minutes.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I do that frequently.
So speaking of you running around, you are moving house soon.
Yeah, that's
right.
And
you've been packing up all your gear.
So yeah, this was it. I sent the rest of the Guitar Nerds a message this weekend because I was packing up my flat, and that meant That meant bagging up or casing all of my guitars off of the various guitar stands. And I haven't started working on the effects or the amplifiers here. But whenever I am questioned on what my
questioned on
what my guitar setup is, I'm always like, well, I have 15 guitars. That's what I normally say. I'm like, I've got 15 guitars. That is excessive. 15, whenever I'm asked, 15, that many. We did a count up, and I have 23.
23 and me.
Yeah, which means that I had 8 guitars that I didn't realize I owned.
And this... Were they guitars that you knew that you owned, and had someone said, write down all the guitars that you've got, you would have remembered that you had them, or... weren't just like mystery guitars that you were using as you put a lampshade on and stuff like that.
No, that is the good thing. I was aware of all of them. I was just miscounting. And there were a couple that I forgot about. I forgot that I owned that St. Vincent, for example, until I...
Okay, good.
Until I found that guitar, it in a case.
That guitar that nearly won Gear of the Year a couple of years ago. Yeah, good. Okay.
But that's good. I was glad that was a nice little rediscovery. I was like, oh, brilliant. I'm probably going to play this again. So that was nice. There were quite a few. And of course, that doesn't include the basses that I tour with, because they stay in my band's lockup.
What?
So I have two basses that stay there, which are two jazz basses.
Right. But so you've got 25.
Yeah.
Does Emma have anything, or is included
so
in that?
So that was including Emma's, because Emma owns a Squire vintage modified Jaguar in Surf Green.
Yeah, yeah.
And she also has, you've seen this, a custom shop, not Fender custom shop, a custom built thin line Telecaster with a cello headstock.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is...
That's the one that people always comment about on whenever those videos with your guitars in the background, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a very weird headstock. So, listener, by cello headstock, I mean sort of literally that. So the tuners are all going backwards like a slot headstock guitar would be. But rather than it being a slot headstock, they're all sort of next to each other on a very thin, long headstock. It's very weird and very confusing to tune. Not necessarily something I would recommend. But yeah, I was counting. There are 3 Stratocasters.
Let me think about this. So you've got a classic player.
No,
just a classic series.
Classic
50s.
Yeah.
You've also got a American original.
Yeah.
60s.
Yeah.
And an American original 50s.
No, I have a road-worn 50s.
Road-worn 50s. Yeah. Okay.
So it's 3 Strats, Baja Telecaster.
Yeah.
I am counting the...
What's the... just out of interest, I was thinking about Baja. I was thinking about getting a Baja Telecaster recently, but I've got no idea what the switching does. I know it's got an interesting switching system. You, as an owner of a Baja Telecaster, just wondering if you could explain the switching system for me?
Yes, the switching system on a Baja Telecaster works in a way that I put it on the bridge and don't touch it. Because that's what tellies should sound like.
Okay, fair point.
But yeah, that's very good. I've enjoyed that Baja Telecaster. And then
weird that, isn't it? Honestly.
And then I've quite enjoyed the Gretsch. Do you remember that flower finished Gretsch? That's technically mine. That belongs to Guitar Nerds.
Yeah. Actually, right now it belongs to me because I haven't paid myself back for it.
Oh, right.
I see. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's there.
That's part of the one of the long list of things that I need to pay myself back
you,
for.
You do. You should do that. Yeah. But that was rather good, that Gretsch. And then
has that got volume knobs on it at the moment?
No.
I've got some.
Oh, sweet. I need a volume and a tone.
Yeah, I've got them. I can't remember where they are, but I've got them somewhere. Right. Okay, they might be in my bag. I've got them somewhere.
Yeah, well, that would be cool. And then I think there's a few sort of random like cheap things that I bought. So there's like an Epiphone Gold Top 56 Les Paul.
Yeah, wraparound bridge. No, 54 had the wraparound bridge.
Yeah, the 56 isn't it? It's just, you know, P90s gold. And then there's things like there's a Bass 6 in there, a Squire vintage modified Bass 6. There's also on the Squire front, there's also a Squire Classic Player Jazz Bass.
Yeah.
I just remember 2 guitars that I also have that I've lent to a friend. So there are... Speaking of Squire, because I've lent him a Squire Affinity P bass, which is my first bass, so that doesn't really count. And another Squire Standard Jazz bass, which
okay.
again doesn't really count because they're Squires.
I'm not sure Dan Grace would agree with you there, but okay.
On the Epiphone front, there's an Epiphone EB3 bass, the long scale version of the SG bass.
Yep.
There is an Epiphone Jack Cassidy.
Yes.
Which is the large hollow body. Jack Cassidy actually played it was known as the Les Paul bass when it was originally released by Gibson. And it was a 335, almost an offset 335 style bass. And it was short scale and in gold top. And Jack Cassidy had his signature model made in long scale in a 34 inch scale. Also in gold top, but I got it in black with white binding. And he has this he has a Veritone pickup in the middle of the body that you can run at, I think, 100, 250 or 500 whatevers that essentially boosts the output of the pickup. So it's a very woody sounding, right up to a quarter poundery sort of P bass sound. But that's quite a good one.
I have sold loads of those
during
my time working at GAC. It was always very popular, but right now is the first time that I've ever Googled him, and I didn't realize he played in Jefferson Airplane.
Yeah, he's a really weird player.
And also Hot Tuna.
Right. He's a really unusual player because he slings really low, and he's quite a sort of sloppy, lazy player, which I really like, but it's just a weird bass choice for that sort of style.
He apparently also... He performed live on stage with Jimi Hendrix in 1968.
Oh, cool.
And he also played bass on the Jimi Hendrix song Voodoo Child.
There you go.
How about that?
Oh, I didn't know that.
No, neither did I.
Oh, what a wonderful fact. But yeah, that's good. And what else do I have? That other signature model by Epiphone. Not the comedian, the other one. Alan Woody. Yeah, that's right. The Alan Woody Rumble Catch. Do you remember those?
You've got one of those?
Yeah, of course.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's sat in a case for a long time.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're great. They're great. You know, gold hardware, a lovely sort of rich, vibrant Gibson through red. Two mini humbuckers in the neck and middle position. What's not to like? I mean, that's
outrageous.
Cool. Yeah.
Outrageous.
So there's that. And then, goodness, I don't know. There's the Gibson ES-175.
Yeah.
Don't
you? You've got a Les Paul bass as well, don't you?
Oh, yeah. There's a Gibson ES-175.
Is that what you played on the
Boss ad?
Boss video.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Because I was trying to work out if it was that or something.
Yeah,
else.
I did actually take my Fender Mustang as well. But they
Oh, yeah, it was in the background, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, they didn't use any of the takes for that. But yeah, so the Fender Mustang.
And Stonefield, of course.
I've got the Stonefield, and I have a 50s P bass. A 60s lacquer series jazz bass,
which you had finished in Sunburst. Oh, you're an idiot.
Yeah, it was Fiesta Red. Yeah. I had it refinished in a two-tone Sunburst.
Yeah,
which is the best color.
It's not the best color. You could have had it. You could have done it in any cool color.
Well,
but you decided to do a color. I'm pretty sure that bass comes in two-tone Sunburst.
It does, but they do it in a poly finish, don't they? Because Fender cheap out on all their finishes. So
it's not cheaping out. If you want to get a nitro lacquer, you just got to pay a little bit more because it's a premium finish.
Yes, exactly. Well, they unfortunately didn't do this bass in that option. They have released it as a lacquer model.
Yeah, I thought
they've released a lacquer model. They actually just announced one today, in fact. A lacquer model, but in white.
I saw that. It looks really good.
Yeah, they used to do it in black, but yeah. So many more basses, I guess, than guitars. But I thought that was quite an impressive collection. I definitely haven't counted all 25. I don't think I must be missing some.
No. You're definitely missing some. But
yeah.
At this point, we're just sort of you're just showing off a bit, to be completely honest.
Yeah, I mean, it's not all mine. A lot of it's Guitar Nerds related.
But there is that as well. Yeah.
We're actually podcasting at mine today, and so we're in the room where I keep all the pedals.
I've already gone on a since Joe's moving and everything's going to be packed up. I have already gone on a bit of a pilfering spree. So I am taking home the Hudson Electronics Broadcast, which is a pedal that I've obviously watched videos on and have heard other people play, but I've never had a chance to have a go on myself. And I know that the Guitar Nerds community is a big fan of the Hudson Electronics Broadcast.
It's very, very
so
good.
I really want to have a go of it for myself. And I picked up the TC Electronic Third Dimension, which I'm going to borrow for a bit. And I also picked up this Interfax Harmonic Percolator, which I don't know, looks really interesting. I used to have one, I think, but I haven't seen it for 18 months or so.
Yeah,
so
maybe I'm borrowed it for a week.
Keen to see how that sounds.
2 years ago. It is, and it is a fantastic sounding pedal. Is that all you're taking?
No, I'll probably take some more stuff.
Should definitely have a rummage. Now, speaking of pedals, we actually got sent a few bits this week, and also I picked up a couple of other bits as well. So this week we had 3 bits, not necessarily new products, but still super cool products and loads of fun for us to review. We got 3 new pedals from JHS pedals. We got the Bonsai, the Panther Cup, and the Unicorn. The Bonsai is quite exciting. The Bonsai is a tube screamer.
It's like 13 tube screamers.
I thought it was 11, but okay. It's a lot. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. It's nine.
Okay.
9 different tube screamers. Yeah. So
is
yeah.
it oh, are they labeled? Is it obvious to tell what's what? So can you see that one's a TS9 and one's a TS808?
OD1, 808, TS9, MSL, TS10, XR, TS7, Keeley, and JHS.
Okay.
Which is pretty cool. That's great. I mean, if you if you really like tube screamers, you could just get this one, and then you've got
Them all. I wonder if it's called Bonsai because bonsai trees, you know, the thing about bonsai trees is they just sort of live forever. I wonder if that's why.
I don't know. Do you know Mark Packham did a video recently where he talked about this pedal, and I think he might have spoken about the origin of the name, but I'm not 100% sure. But nonetheless, I love tube screamers. For what it's worth, there have been a couple for me recently that have really stood out, tube screamer style pedals. One was, again, from Hudson Electronics, the Sidecar.
Is that what that is? It's more of a
tube screamer.
Tube screamer.
Yeah.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. Which I love. I think it's incredibly versatile. And just really, really rich and tons of depth. And the other one is Chirality Audio from, I'm going to say Italy. I think they're from Italy. And they've made a tube screamer clone which has 3 modes which make it suitable for either guitar, bass, or keyboards, which I think was a really interesting way of doing it. And of course, for me, I loved having a pedal that I could use and sound great on guitar and sound great on a bass. And I love tube screamers just because I like a light, transparent overdrive and the fact that you know that did that so well for any instrument was banging. But
I think the pedal that I'm the tube screamer style pedal that I still like the most is the Texas Flood from Cast Engineering. We haven't really talked about Cast for a little while.
Not for a while.
I don't know what happened to them.
What did they do that we really like?
The Casper delay.
The
Casper was really nice because it had those the lights that pulsated in time with the delay, which was really cool. So that was really good. And I just having a look to see if they've done anything recent. It doesn't look like they have, you know. There's Casper, Gypsy Haze, Monk Zito Peace Drive, which I seem to remember talking about.
I thought we had 3 of their
pedals,
didn't we?
The Pulse Drive, the Texas Flood.
The Pulse Drive, the Texas Flood, and the Casper. Yeah. Those are the 3 I've got here.
Yeah, it doesn't look like they've done anything else since then, which is a shame, because they were they were cool.
Well, that Casper's great.
Casper's really cool.
It was in with my sort of top delay pedals.
Yeah,
I remember I was putting it in my sort of top 3 things that we had, along with the Seymour Duncan Vapor Trails.
I really like that pedal.
I really really like that as well. And I can't remember some other, probably the Canyon. And the other 2 JHS ones we've got. Speaking of delays, the Panther Cub. Which is
the new version of the Pink Panther, right?
No, the Panther Cub is their analog delay.
Oh, okay.
So, yes, this is their analog delay, which just like the Pink Panther comes with a couple of recessed switches, only this time switching between, I think on the Pink Panther it was a digital and tape style switch, and I think maybe there was a modulation one as well, or was it just the one?
It just switches from digital to tape.
Right, so on the Panther Cub, they give you a speed and a modulation on and off, which is fantastic.
Oh, okay, so you can get that kind of...
Vapor trails-y.
And carbon copy sound.
Yeah. But so much more intense than the carbon copy, because, of course, it's great that the carbon copy has an on-off for the modulation, but you have no control of the speed and depth of the modulation. So you can...
Actually, I'm not sure that's true. I think there's a trim pot, is there not?
Oh, there might be
inside.
A trim pot.
I think there's something inside so strong.
Okay.
That's a song.
Right. I see. I thought you were losing your mind. but yeah, the Panther Cub has those switches on the side, and then it has quite a 6 control fascia. So you've got time, volume, mix, ratio, feedback, and a master EQ for the entire pedal, as well as a tap.
Now, tap tempo on an analog delay is not super common.
No, and it's really awesome. Because, of course, the way analog pedals work, in the way that they oscillate and self-oscillate, if you were to dime the feedback on this and then switch between tapping very quickly and tapping quite slowly on the Panther Cub, you can get it to do all those sort of analog delay, beep, 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 boop, 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 boop,
yeah,
sort of sounds, which is fantastic. Like, for me, one of the reasons that I love the RE20 so much is that second... that tap tempo that you can keep your foot on and then create that beep 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 beep.
I love that sound. I use the RE20 quite a lot of band practice.
Oh, yeah?
When I'm playing in my emo punk band, I just annoy everybody by just turning on the oscillation during quiet bits, or when we're just sort of not playing a song and just talking.
It's the best. It's the best bit. I recently rewired my pedal board, and I put an RE20 into the MS3 chain, because my biggest problem with the RE20 is if you ever get too crazy with the tails, you can't do anything about it.
Yeah, totally.
You just have to sort of wait for it to slow down. But because I've put it in the loop, I can cut it at any time.
Yeah, okay.
And just lose those tails if I ever misstep.
Yeah, that can be a problem. Is functionally, they're a bit unwieldy, but so are RE201s, which is, kind of what they're trying to do.
Exactly.
Well, not what they're trying to do, what they are doing.
And the last pedal we got from JHS is the Unicorn. Can you guess what the Unicorn is?
Well, I know what it is.
Oh, yeah. So it's Unicorn.
It's tunes your guitar to A, corn, like corn. Yeah?
Yes, that's it. No, it's the Unicorn Univibe.
Oh, yeah.
Which is genius. And this is a Univibe with a tap tempo, which I think is super cool. I haven't actually plugged this one in yet.
Are there any...
It's a lovely baby blue.
What other Univibes are out on the market then? And is there anything else that's got tap tempo?
I don't know. Other Univibes. Is the Dry Bell, the unfortunately named Dry Bell, is that a Univibe or is that a vibrato?
That wouldn't happen if they were a British company, would it?
No, I'm not sure, actually. I don't know what Univibes are available on the market. I think whenever I always use vibrato instead of Univibe, so...
Dry Bell Univibe does not have a tap. Viscous Vibe does not have a
the,
tap.
The, I'll tell you...
But he only bought the...
I'll tell you what. You say that about the Dry Bell...
Oh, but there's a favourite switch thing.
Oh, is that just a favourite switch? I wonder if you can use it as a tap.
I don't know.
No, maybe not.
F1L. I don't know. I guess it could be anything, really.
Yeah.
It probably depends. Dry Bell do a little accompanying pedal similar to the Strymon favourite switch.
Yeah.
That's what that's called, isn't
it?
Yeah,
that's right.
Very similar to that. It's just a small square, very small. It's probably what, like an inch and a half? 2 inches square with just an output and a single switch on there. So what this does probably depends on what pedal you plug it into. So if you plug it into a delay, it probably does tap, and if you I don't know. I'm just talking.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And those were all the JHS pedals. So I'm really excited to try the Panther Cub out some more, because I had a mess around with it earlier, and it's a super cool, really warm sounding analog delay. I couldn't get it to freak out. Like, you know how you can get a carbon copy to completely lose its mind?
Yeah, yeah.
I couldn't get it to do that. It was like it had something gating it when it got to the point.
Okay.
So I'm going to have a mess around with that and see if I can break it a bit. But that was pretty cool. And the other thing, I picked up something else this week, which I love. And I know this has been out a while. I know we've spoken about it loads, but I've always spoken about it from a sort of outside perspective. The Game Changer Plus pedal.
Yeah. It's fantastic. It really is such an interesting concept. But I'm also quite surprised that nobody's done it before. So I'm sure most people listening to this will know what the Game Changer Plus pedal is. It's the pedal that looks like the pedal that you'd have on a piano. And it very much has the action of a pedal that you'd have on a piano. They're sustain pedals on pianos, aren't they? It very much has that kind of action. And what it does is, when you're playing and you push down on the pedal, it will capture a moment of what you're playing, similar to the Electro-Harmonix Freeze. But the Electro-Harmonix Freeze just kind of captures the overall sound.
Well, you either turn it on or off, don't you? The Freeze is either you're either capturing that point or you're not capturing
but also the bit that it, and it's, I think it's difficult for me to explain because I don't really understand it, but the bit that it's capturing is more like an artifact.
Yeah,
it's
like a harmonic.
A harmonic is probably the word I'm looking for. Yeah. Yes. Whereas what the Plus pedal does is it really captures a sort of a moment in time.
Yeah.
And you hold it, and you can play a chord, and you will just get. It's very polyphonic and it's very musical.
Yeah, I find with the Freeze, you very much get the start and the stop of the artifact, the harmonic that it captures as well. So when you sample up a Freeze, you can kind of hear the da 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 in that note that it captures.
Yeah.
Whereas with the Plus pedal, it's very organic. Certainly the start and the tail of that note it captures, it blends very well into itself.
Yeah.
So you get just a smooth, clear note. And because it has that foot pedal that's controlling the volume that you're bringing that held part in and out of, you can swirl it in underneath what you're playing, which is lovely.
Yeah.
And the fact that you can turn off the direct signal and just work on the swell, so you can use it almost as a
kind of like a volume pedal,
like a harmonics volume pedal. Yeah. which is amazing.
Another thing that I absolutely love about it is the fact that it's got an effects loop. So just being able to put something else in there, you know, imagine just putting, for example, New Neighbor Immerse.
Yeah.
Just in the effects loop. I bet you just get such an incredible harmonic, shimmering,
absolutely
ethereal sound.
Absolutely. And even if you want to sort of modulate that sound as well, something like the Boss Dimension Chorus, something like that, just coming in and out.
Yeah.
Yeah, a totally cool pedal. I've had tons of fun with it. They are a chunk of money.
They are a lot of money. Yeah,
and
yeah.
They're a bit of an unwieldy size for a pedal board.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel as though you can, because of what it does, it needs to be the size it is. So you can give them the fact that it's not very pedal board friendly.
Yeah.
And also, I think the other thing that you need to bear in mind is, if you're using this pedal, it's probably quite intricate to your sound. I think that a lot of people would build and base their whole guitar playing around a pedal like this. I really think it's a focal point.
I think it's one of those things that you could certainly do an entire set with. Certainly, yeah. I was sat down with it running my custom shop Gibson ES-175 into the Tweed Blues Junior. With just the Game Changer Plus pedal, and I was like, this is a really good song.
Yeah. And also, it's not just good for guitar. I remember the first demo, I think it was the first demo I saw of it was...
Was this at NAMM?
At
was it 2016?
I didn't got 2016, or was it? No, what year are we in now? 2018. So we went in 2018. So I think it maybe came out at NAMM 2017, I think.
That would make sense, because then they had their Pulse Drive, the electronically...
No, the, I think that came box. Afterwards.
Yeah, that came out this year.
That came out this year.
They were
yeah.
pioneering that this year, because yes. they were all dressed up in their Men in Black suits.
Right, okay.
And they had a briefcase that had the Pulse pedal okay. in it.
But I think the first demo I saw of it was someone playing a trumpet through it, and it sounded unbelievable.
Because isn't that right? Isn't the first year that they were hosting these pedals, weren't they downstairs? Weren't they?
They were in a weird area, and because they're from. I can't remember where they're from. I'm just having a look to see if it says where they're from. But
Eastern Europe?
Yeah, I think I can't remember. I can't remember where it is that they're from. But they, at the time, that was the only product that they had. So they were there basically just with their mate, I think.
Yeah.
Their mate had a stand, and they went, okay, come on then, you come along.
They certainly at 2018 Winter NAMM, they had a pretty decent sized stand.
Yeah.
In a really good area, and at least six staff.
Yeah,
and
same at Summer NAMM as well, actually. They had their own stand, and they just had that.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
That pedal, the plasma, and the rack version plasma as well.
I thought it was great. I was over there when Jamie Stillman from Earthquaker Devices had come over to... He'd heard about the plasma pedal and came over to check it out. And I just think
Latvia.
I know that Game Changer have taken off, but they're still like a small effects pedal brand with two pedals under their name. And when you've got Jamie Stillman from, you know, coming over to...
Check out the competition.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's, you know, you've made it when if Jamie Stillman's coming over to check out your pedals.
I just think of that scene in The Simpsons where Bill Gates goes to buy out Homer's internet company, and what he actually does is he just goes and beats him up. So that's what I imagine Jamie Stillman was doing, is he was going to buy them out.
Speaking of Bill Gates, this week at work we ran a competition to name a new billionaire pedal. You know, the Dan Electro billionaire pedals?
Yeah.
They've got like the...
So they're giving you the rights to name that?
No, they're not. No, I was just like, you know, it was like, name one and I'll give away a free Dan Electro amp.
I
photoshopped up like what the winning one would look like. But you know, they have like the big spender spinning speaker and the filthy rich tremolo or whatever it is. So I let people choose the name, and the one that I chose to win was the Bill's Gate.
Bill's Gate.
The Bill's Gate noise gate. Yeah. It had to be a money-themed pedal. Yeah. That's so good.
That's really smart.
Bill's Gate.
Really smart.
Love it. Yeah. And there's been one other thing that was sort of released last week. Did we speak about this?
No, we didn't. No.
So everyone's favourite battery-powered amp, that's not the Boss Katana Mini.
Or the Fender Passport. No, I'm kidding.
Do you have one?
The Passport Mini is battery-powered, yeah. Oh, it's more of a PA than
I thought the Passport was a PA, yeah. The Blackstar Fly 3, which, you know, is pretty cool. The cool thing about the Blackstar Fly 3 is that you can get an extension cab for it. The not-so-cool thing about it is that they still haven't introduced Bluetooth onto it. Well, they have, but they have a whole separate one that's Bluetooth.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. The thing about the Fly 3 is it really can't be underestimated just how much of a turning point that was for mini practice amps.
Yeah.
I remember when Drew from Blackstar, who's the UK sales manager, I guess.
Not anymore.
Okay. Oh, okay. When
who does he work for now? I can't remember.
I think he's...
No. He's moved to...
I mean...
Somewhere else. I can't remember.
When they came in to demo it, I looked at it and I thought, I don't care about this. This is a mini amp. This is going to be, it's going to sound bad and I don't care. And he plugged it in and it sounded fantastic. And I did care. And yeah, when they, so what they've released now is a Paisley, pink Paisley version, which looks really cool from afar, and then when you get close, it's very, very cool. It is very cool.
The Paisley is really stretched in some places, but it's still super cool. They have released a blue flower.
Oh, have they as well?
As well, but I don't think it's blue flower. I think it's blue Paisley.
Right. Okay.
Well,
yeah.
But, they probably didn't quite have the rights to blue flower, but yes, the pink Paisley being universal enough for them to get away with it. There is a. I just wish they'd changed the grill, because the grill's still black.
Yeah, I quite
like
it.
It's still like a modern black grill, but then with everything else being Paisley. But it's very cool.
Yeah, I quite like it. I think it's quite fun.
Look, if you want something for home, you know, it's got headphones out. It looks cool. We know that they sound good, obviously, if you're going to want
to. The delay's really good on it as well. The delay's really good, especially when you've got the two plugged in together. They do this weird kind of 3D sound you can't really tell where the delay is coming from. It's really interesting.
I think if you just want something for home use and you're only ever going to plug a guitar into it, like I can't sort of emphasize that enough. These little battery powered amps are terrible at taking anything, you know, additionally into them, any effects or anything.
I didn't know you'd talk about.
You know, if you just want something to mess around on a guitar, I still think these are great. Like, don't get me wrong, I love the Katana Mini. The Katana Mini is absolutely banging.
Yeah,
it's still £100.
Yeah,
and I think £100 is like at a price point where I'm like, I'm not so sure this is the price that I want to pay for a battery amp. Sort of at £100, I'm kind of like, can't I pay £40 more and get like a Fender Mustang GT?
Yeah,
and it's sort of, well, of course you would go for a Mustang GT. I mean, to be fair, I think you should go for a Mustang, the Mustang GT 40. Anyway, if you want a home use amp, I don't think there's anything that sounds as good, that's as versatile as that, that's ever been made. Like, that's an ultimate solution, and for the price, it's bonkers. But if what you specifically need is a battery powered amp
and something small,
yeah, well, I guess
I guess if it's specifically you want something battery powered,
and something, you know, that you can get in hand luggage,
yeah,
I think for £40 for a Paisley Blackstar Fly, I mean,
is that what they are? 40 quid?
40 quid, really? Yeah. Well, they might be really more. Good. Maybe they're 50, but you know, it's still around that. And
yeah,
it's a crazy cool amplifier. Anyway, that was everything that we had sent to us this week. We should we dive headfirst into some questions?
Questions.
So, on the questions, on the Facebook group this week, I put out some lovely pictures of Jay Cross.
Yeah, thanks for that. You found maybe the worst pictures of me that possibly I've ever seen.
I just peeked.
The ones in particular, and perhaps I bring it on myself, because those pictures in particular that you put up were from the time that, actually the second time, not the first time, nor the third time, I should hasten to add, the second time that I took part in a eating competition. And so I was looking a little bit bloated.
Hadn't you just consumed a hot dog in a doner kebab?
Yes. Yes, that's correct. Yeah. And I had done it faster than anybody else.
Do you remember what your winning time was?
No, I don't remember what my winning time was. No, I don't think it's timed like that. I won it the year after as well.
That's impressive.
I haven't had my trophy back yet, actually.
I can't remember. I won a speed-related eating competition at the Druid's Arms a few years ago.
Was it who could eat whilst on speed?
is that
what it was?
I always eat on speed. No, there were three rounds. There was spice, quantity, and speed.
Oh, no, I remember you talking about this.
We had to submit a team, and GAK submitted a team. You have a team of three, so one person for each round, and I had the speed round, and I won the speed round. I was the only person to win. We actually came last in both of the other two rounds.
Yeah, I remember.
But I won the speed round. I can't remember exactly. I think
What was it that you had to eat?
I think I consumed four. I think it was four. It might have been, no, it must be four foot-long. Is it four? I think it was four foot-long sausage rolls in 2 minutes. I think it was there. I think it, that did sounds you, that sounds like it couldn't be done. But
did
I think
you
I did
facilitate
it.
The Kobayashi method?
What was that? I just opened my throat. To be fair, when they were announcing me as the winner, I was literally choking. I was just trying to keep it in.
Is it Kobayashi? I'm sure it's Kobayashi. Yes, the Kobayashi method is when you take the I suppose if it's a sausage roll, then it was different. But basically, Kobayashi was this guy who completely blew apart the hot dog eating world when he started to work out on a macro level how to eat a hot dog quicker than anyone else, as opposed to just taking a hot dog and shoving it in your mouth. So the Kobayashi method is you take the sausage out of the hot dog,
right?
You out of the bun, you break the sausage in two,
right?
And then you guzzle that down, yeah?
Yeah, and then you do the bread.
And then you take the bread, you tear the bread in half, you submerge the bread in water,
right?
And then you eat that, and then you do it with the other part as well. And it's absolutely disgusting because you're just eating wet bread. But he worked out that the main reason that people start to lag in hot dog eating competitions is because they get really, they can't
dry,
take on enough water.
Right.
So yeah,
he
doubled the record when he took it was it, I can't I think it was and I don't know why I know this but I think it was the Coney Island hot dog eating competition. I'm sure that's where it was, and if I remember correctly, the record stood at 25, and I think he did 51,
right?
And he like blew apart the world record.
That's impressive. In this competition, we weren't allowed to drink any fluids whilst we were eating, and actually the fellow next to me got disqualified because he broke up the sausage roll.
Oh, okay, so that wouldn't have been, yeah,
so,
okay.
Yeah, so they you had to just consume. But anyway, moving on to the questions as announced some time ago. Hank Spaddock says, have you got any opinions on power supplies for boards? That is it reasonable to charge 4 or 5 times the price of effectively the same product? I understand you can make this argument with guitars, but you're far more aware of the quality of parts and craftsmanship on a guitar, as well as an amp or pedals, compared to a power supply. It's very cheap and easy these days to build something that can provide a solid 9-volt with enough current for a regular board. Do Strymon use DSP in their power supplies? You know, sort of, what is the justified reason for people charging so much?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question, and I think the I'm going to tackle the last point first, which is you could easily make something that would offer the power that you need. It's like, well, yeah, of course, but you could also build a guitar if you wanted to, but I've got no interest in doing that.
Yeah.
And if I did, it would be bad. That I think is one thing. Moving on to the bigger point of, is it reasonable? I mean, I don't see why not. People can sort of charge whatever they want and you choose whether you want to buy it or not. I think that there have been an increased number of companies who are bringing out very cheap power supplies. We were talking before the podcast about the
Doner Kebab.
Yeah, yeah. Did I ever tell you about the time that I won a Doner Kebab eating contest?
Yes,
think. Did I? Okay, cool. Yeah, I'll tell you about it some other time. About the company Doner, who make really cheap stuff.
This podcast is not endorse their products in any way, shape or form.
Well, I mean I've never used any of the Doner stuff. I've seen it really cheap on Amazon, and I've seen people using it on their boards and stuff. I would always be really wary of a cheap power supply. I mean, I've got nothing to go by on the Doner stuff, so I'm not talking about them in particular, but I'd always be really wary about a cheap power supply, because the thing is that yes, you can buy something cheap, but also you've got to bear in mind that the power supply is connected to your entire board. And if there's something that goes wrong with your power supply, you could end up frying everything.
Yeah,
now,
absolutely.
Yes, that's kind of a sensationalist thing to worry about. And I, in general, I don't think you need to worry about that. But I do think that there is certainly an argument for at least spending a sort of decent level on getting something that you know will be okay. Absolutely. The other thing that you've got to bear in mind is, of course, isolation. Now, where people,
now this is important to explain, because this is where people get confused when when people are saying there's a, you know, a cheap power supply and an expensive power supply with the same amount of banks. Mm-hmm. I think potentially people aren't understanding the concept of isolated power.
So I also am not completely on it with isolation, but the way that I understand it is that rather than all the the outputs being chained together,
yeah, running off of a master amount of milliamps.
Yeah, they all
have their independently allocated.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Fine. That's what I thought. Okay. So the way that that works is that you know that everything is gonna have its own current draw, and therefore it also shouldn't be affected by whatever else is being plugged into it. Therefore, if you've got a particularly noisy pedal, like a noisy delay or fuzzes can sometimes
RE20s are exceptionally noisy.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And so that can carry on through to other pedals. So having an isolated power supply will mitigate that to a certain degree.
Absolutely.
Also, the other thing that you've got to bear in mind is some of the cheaper power supplies won't offer enough power for some really high current and high processing pedals, such as the Strymon pedals.
And I think you'll find price almost, you know, pound for pound goes up with milliampage offered.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the for example, the Timeline, I think it requires something like
maybe 450
like was what I have in my head. 450, something like that. And so you need to have a power supply that's going to be able to do that, and just lots of power supplies won't. I mean, the classic power supply that we always used to sell behind the till at work was the Boss PSA 230. It was called the PSA 230 because it had 230 milliamps in it, so it wouldn't have powered a Timeline. You needed Absolutely. To get something more powerful than that. So yes, I think that there are some, you do sometimes see these things and it's just like, this is a lot of money. But when you're talking about the top end stuff like the Zuma and the Ojai,
Simpson.
You know, they've got some serious power in there, and
absolutely.
They're also super hardy. And that's the other thing that you've got to bear in mind is that nowadays, if you're going to be carting these things around, I mean, you know, someone like you, Joe, you're going to be carting them around. You've got a risk that they're not going to be waterproof, but you want them to be at least kind of, you know, to withstand you dropping a beer on them.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think that there's a lot of factors in there, and I agree. I do think that sometimes these things can get a little bit out of control.
Potentially. I have always seen as much of a direct correlation between quality and price as there are on any other piece of equipment, and I'm fine for companies to charge me more for better quality stuff. I mean, one of the other things that I think is relevant with power supplies more and more as pedal boards are getting bigger is weight.
Yeah.
The Voodoo Labs make fantastic power supplies, but they're very old school and they weigh a ton. And
I
recently changed over onto the MXR Isobrick.
The new one.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
I've always been a huge fan of the Isobrick.
It's so lightweight that I can Velcro it to the underside of my board. I don't need to
bolt it in like you do with the... Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've always been a huge fan of the MXR one. I think that's a really good mid-level power supply for most people.
And there's loads.
I don't think you could run the Strifecta. so, you know, all three of the big Strymon pedals off of it.
Possibly not. I think it has two 500 milliamp 9-volt outputs, a couple of 18s, a 15, a load of 9s, varying between 100, 250 and 300.
Yeah.
But a good range of stuff.
Yeah. Absolutely. I've got nothing bad to say about the Isobrick. I think it's a really, really good power supply.
Absolutely. And for the prices, I think it costs the same as a Voodoo Labs Pedal Power 2, which is what I was running previously.
Really? I thought they were cheaper than that.
No, I think they're around the same. But the Pedal Power 2 was incapable of powering my MS3 as well as all the pedals on my board. Whereas this one's now running everything. Which is really impressive, including the Pettyjohn Petty Drive 2, which runs at 18.
Goodness. Okay, yeah, so the Voodoo Labs Pedal Power 2 Plus is £179, and the Isobrick is 140 quid. Yeah, so it's
and
cheaper,
the Isobrick is lighter weight.
Oh, actually, that might be
stuff.
The might not be the new one.
Just... Oh, really? No, there's the Isobrick and what's the other one? The DC Brick.
No, because there's a new version of the Isobrick. We talked about it fairly recently. Right. I can't remember what's different about it. Huh. But yeah, I think that's a great power supply. I think it's I've always been a big fan of it.
Yeah. And this is actually only
Sorry to interrupt.
No, go.
It does. No, it's out of focus. I can't see. Maybe it does have more than. Sorry, you go ahead.
Well, this is only a little thing, but it also has a very very bright blue LED light on the Isobrick. So when I've got it. When I've got it velcroed underneath my board, it illuminates the entire underside of the board
cool.
in blue, and it just I was like, oh yeah.
Looks really cool,
like I've spent time on this.
It has got two 450 milliamp outputs on it, so it would do two of the Strymon pedals.
I don't know how much the Donna equivalent is, but I promise you, if you're running any pedals that you care about, it is worth. Do you know there's a full tone?
It's got SAG on there as well. I hadn't realised.
Yeah, on a couple of them, two of the inputs
have
SAG.
Yeah, two SAGs. Yeah.
There's a sort of an email that does the rounds every now and again from Full Tone, mm-hmm. From a fella who emailed Full Tone about I think it was an OCD. I can't remember, but I think it was him. He'd managed to somehow get, or I don't know actually if, because I think some people had said no, the owner replied it did just go to an info box, the guy wasn't trying to get hold of the owner, but for whatever reason this fella's emailed the owner of Full Tone about an OCD running noisily, and he's explained his setup, which includes a Donna power supply, and essentially Mr. Fuller has emailed him back.
Oh yeah,
having a right pop at him for running a quality Full Tone pedal through a Donna power supply. And obviously this has done the rounds a bit, because it's not very customer service friendly for Full Tone to have such a massive go at a fella who's sort of bought into their products. And I completely understand that he was out of line, but as someone who works in guitar shops, it annoys me every day when people sort of complain about stuff when they're actually running it through subpar equipment. I don't just mean for power supplies. That goes
cables and stuff.
It goes across the board when people return stuff because they say that it's got fret buzz and it's just because they can't hold a G chord properly. But
I mean, that sort of gets into a whole other area of discussion. Yeah. You know, the secret life of the guitar shop employee. We don't want everyone thinking that we're, you know, just like all those fellas on YouTube that just talk about how much they hate working in a guitar shop, because the positives definitely outweigh the negatives. But that said, there are a lot of negatives.
yes, unfortunately. So moving on the questions, Tim Natrajan, that's definitely not how you pronounce his name, has asked, if you had to have just one guitar and one amp and nothing else, apart from a lead, and one pedal, what would you have and why?
Oh, okay. Good question. I would probably say, I assume money's no object here.
He hasn't suggested that money would be.
Okay. In that case, I would say a custom shop 52 Tele.
Uh-huh.
With four-way selector switch.
Oh, for goodness sake.
No.
There's no way you would use a four-way no. selector switch.
Custom shop telly, and I think probably I have to say the amp that I've got at the moment I really, really like, and that is a Fender Princeton with a 12-inch speaker.
Yeah.
I just, honestly, there's something about having that those extra couple inches, it really does make a difference on that amp, and it just really fills it out and just makes it more well-rounded, and it's just absolutely fantastic. So I would say those, and then what is the one pedal I would have? I guess my heart is saying, of course, I would have the Boss RE20, the single greatest effects pedal of all time, but then my head is saying, Am I confident in my ability to keep this guitar in tune? Do I need a TU3? But no, I think I would probably go RE20, and then Princeton and Telly, I think.
That is an excellent choice.
You've got to go with a bass.
I was going to go with the guitar.
No, I know. Imagine guitar with a bass. You're stranded on a desert island and you're there with your Ampeg SVT and 8x12. Oh no, I broke a valve.
So guitar-wise, I will also go custom shop, but not with Fender. I'd go for a Gibson ES-275.
Okay.
With P90s. I've got a real soft spot for those. We've got a few of them in at the moment, and they sound absolutely fantastic. Just not being quite as deep as a 175, sort of straddling somewhere in between that sort of 330 and the 175 body shape, I think is just fantastic, and they sound great and look great and are really, really playable and really resonant acoustically. I love everything about them. Amp-wise, unusually, I'm going to go for a Vox AC4.
AC4?
I okay. really like the AC4. I know they can only do one thing, but I think they do that one thing really well. And they
hand-wired AC4.
Yes. Yeah, they did a limited edition hand-wired, I think, blue recently, because they've had a couple of different looking versions of the AC4. And I really like the ones that have a kind of a carpeted, an almost carpet look cloth mesh rather mm-hmm. than the traditional Vox mesh. I think those ones look fantastic, very, very TV-esque. So I completely, completely love those. They're very, very good.
Speaking of, sorry to completely take the limelight away from you there, but speaking of Vox amps, last Thursday, I went to a show, this band Dark Thoughts from Philadelphia, right. who are just kind of a Ramones-y fast punk band, who weirdly I found out afterwards the singer of that band moved into my girlfriend's house after she moved out.
Random.
Yeah, she didn't know. Yeah, really, really weird. Really weird. I found out about that after the show. So but that completely aside, this other band play called Ancient Shapes, who are a band I'd not heard of before. But they are, I'm just trying to find the fella's name. They're fronted by this guy. They're a Canadian band. And they're fronted by a guy called Daniel Romano, who apparently is, and I apologise to all our Canadian listeners here, I'm probably sounding completely ignorant here, but he is apparently quite a prolific songwriter. And I think he's kind of a folk guy, country artist. He started this band Ancient Shapes, and he had a bit of a who's who in sort of Canadian punk musicians backing him. And they were supposed to be playing in Lewis, but the show was cancelled, so they just jumped on this show in Brighton. And they had the drummer from this band Career Suicide, who are this amazing hardcore band. And he was just one of the best drummers I've ever seen. Absolutely incredible. So fast, so tight. But their setup was unbelievable. So they had two guitar players, both playing Telecasters.
Right.
And both those Telecasters were going into Vox AC30s.
Right.
One was a standard one and one was a hand-wired.
Oh, I love this already.
The bass player was playing a 4003, I think.
Yeah.
Going into a 70s Basement.
Oh, everything. It was perfect.
Honestly, mate.
That's
honestly,
the best setup ever.
They were the drummer was unbelievable. Like the drummer was unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable. But the guitars sounded so good. It was in the County Club, which is this. It's a cooperative run social centre in Brighton.
I mean, it's a squat.
It's not a squat. No, they own the building. But it's run by volunteers, and because of that, it never sounds the best because it's, you know, the sound is done by someone who's a volunteer, and the equipment is looked after by volunteers, and therefore stuff always gets nicked, not by the volunteers, and I'm sure it's not on purpose, just stuff goes missing. So they only have one microphone, the whole thing sounded unbelievable, but Telly's into that AC30 sounded amazing,
wonderful. Well, I was gonna we've got to wrap up soon, but yeah, the pedal I would go with, if I'm going to have an AC4, I'm going to have this custom shop Gibson ES-275. I'm going to go for a T-Rex replicator.
Oh, okay. Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
I've been thinking about getting one.
Mate, I was really thinking about it at the time. And
they're £700.
Yeah, which seems to be a lot cheaper than they were when they first came out.
I think maybe they have gone down in price. I know that there have been two in stock at GAC since they came out.
Right, okay.
So they've sort of stuck at that price. But I was thinking, I've got enough stuff that I could definitely get one.
The only thing is, do you want to get the replicator before the Echo Rec comes out? This is the thing. And I mean, who knows how long this is going to be. Just looking on the T-Rex website, the last update was in April of this year. So that, you know, there's been no update on it yet, but the, so to people who don't know, T-Rex, I don't really know the backstory. I can't remember, but I think they bought the rights to the name Echo Rec, to Benson Echo Rec. And I think they also have some of, like, the original wiring diagrams or something. I'm not sure. I need to read back into it. But they, at NAMM 20, I think it was Summer NAMM 2017, they brought along the prototype for their new Benson Echo Rec, which was very much along the lines of the T-Rex replicator. But in green, obviously, and just with the sort of look and vibe of the Echo Rec, and they keep sort of like teasing it, and it looks unbelievable. It looks unbelievable, and I bet it's going to sound incredible. So yeah, that's my only thought is, and I appreciate that, you know, the time is running out for you to jump on this ship to take you to your castaway point where you can only play guitar by yourself forever, but that's something that I would have in mind is if you're going to get a replicator, do you want to wait for the Echo Rec? Or you could be waiting forever. That's the only other thing.
This is it. That's the problem. Well, we'll see. I'll give it some more thought. Well, that is it for us here on the regular episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast, but we will be continuing over on the Patreon episode where this week we're going to be having a look at a few things that you mentioned on the Facebook forum. We're going to be talking about our top five most versatile guitars, the best combo amplifiers of all time, and the most fun effects pedals you can have. If you head on over to the Patreon version of the podcast for $1 a month, you get the regular episode ad-free and early. $5 a month gets you an extra half an hour every week, plus access to bonus features and mini-series such as Branton's Rant on. $10 a month makes you one of our executive backers, granting you access to everything already mentioned, plus the prestigious honour of having your name read out in one breath by me.
So I did a bit of housekeeping this week, and I feel like there may be some apologies owed.
Had I missed some people?
I don't think you necessarily had... Well, yes, is the short answer to that question. But I think some names had just slipped through the net from when we started doing this for our $10 patrons. So if you are one of the people who whose name we haven't been reading out, I do apologise. If we have missed anybody else out, despite my meticulous housekeeping this week, please do get in touch and let us know. There's also some names who we've been reading out who have not been paying the money. So we have not only scrubbed their names from this, but also from our memories. And Joe has gone back and edited.
Well, we've got their addresses as well.
So absolutely.
But I've sent them excretion in the post.
And he's gone back and he's edited out any erroneously read out names.
Yeah.
You have done that, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I'm going to check tonight. So
good.
You make sure it's...
Okay.
Yeah, okay, fine.
Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Adrian Day, Ethan Jebediah Bartier, Ken Sayer, Matthew King, Stephen Conrady, Gordon G, Richard III, Marin Peter, Sean Arbour, Christopher Wolfman Jefferson, Robert Cousins, Rob Cruz, Scott Hamilton, Tucker Everton, Ernie Cooper, Nate Nagel, Ross Edwards, Christopher Roxas, Robbie Carter Grant, Matt Roberts, Steve Lee, Henry James Baker, Ryan McDermott, Juan Courier, Blake Wyland, Aaron Servanting, Gray, Matt Bellamy, Matt Incliffe, Scott Kennedy, Christoph Losas, Robin Smith, Hans Arms, Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Andy Joyce, Rob Nordwick, Steve Merkel, Mark Cross, Carlos Matcher, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Blair, Tom Slory, Anstis, Paul Corrigan, Will Clare, Mill Garrett, Bill Thompson, Colin Anderson.
Ooh.
See, I think we lost a couple and gained a couple.
And I took some time on Hans Ams because it's the first time we've read him out and he's one of our faves.
He is, yeah.
Here's the best pedal board.
Yeah, absolutely. And setup.
Yeah. The neatest setup of all time.
Fantastic. If you look at this room, it looks like something out of an IKEA catalog.
Yeah. This room that we're podcasting in is just mess. It's just cables and pedals
and synths,
bags
and boxes.
Yeah, it's just rubbish. There's just rubbish everywhere. Yeah. Yeah, it's terrible.
It's just a head rush just in the corner.
Oh, yeah, there's that. Yeah, I quite like that head rush. There's a Helix somewhere. I haven't seen it in a while. There's HX Effects down there. There's about 5 pedal boards, but it's a mess anyway. You know, whereas Hans Ams, that man's neat.
Extremely neat.
Anyway, that is it from us on the podcast. You can.
You're right. You've been a bit burpy tonight.
These beers are really gassy.
A little bit of Windy Pops.
Really, really gassy.
Do you need me to throw you over my shoulder?
Yeah, if you could, that would be great. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Guitar Nerds or on YouTube at Guitar Nerds Videos. You can even visit our website, guitarnerds.net, where all of our various channels are displayed in all of their glory. And you can even purchase Guitar Nerds merchandise and become a true member of the club. That's it from us for this week. We'll catch you next time for some more guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Cheers, gang.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.